July 20th saw the grand opening of M-City, a simulated urban environment on the University of Michigan's North Campus for testing automated cars. Here's U.S. Senator Gary Peters.
Today you're going to remember this day. Today is the launch of technology that's going to transform our country. It's going to transform our planet.
He reminds us that on this day, 46 years ago, another revolution in transportation was taking place.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
I take a ride in one of the test cars. I'm relieved there is a driver as a backup. It's a far cry from Armstrong on the moon, but it does feel momentous.
Hi, Barbara. Let's sign a quick release before you get going here. You are going to have to buckle up because we're in a, this is a hard-breaking situation, so you need to be buckled up. Here we go.
As we drive along, a walking robot mannequin appears suddenly in front of the car.
Pedestrian coming from the right.
Early warning alert and a hard brake. So again, our driver never touched the brake. The vehicle stopped itself.
Next up is testing the car's ability to see a bicyclist approaching.
Remember, the system can see where we cannot. So again, the alert will come before we ever see the bike.
Bicycle coming from the right.
And sure enough,
the University of Michigan researchers I speak with are full of hopes about this technology. Dr. Lewis Merlin is an urban planner and an avid bicyclist.
As a bicycle rider, how are you going to feel with having driverless cars on the road? Are you going to feel better or worse?
I would feel better. I think driverless cars are more likely to obey the rules of the road, more likely to go the speed limit, more likely to yield to a bicyclist.
Dr. Merlin notes that driverless cars will use less gas.
A certain percentage of fuel use comes from how we drive, how aggressively we drive. And essentially, if you're light on the gas pedal and you're light on the brake, you'll use less fuel, about 5 to 10% less fuel.
He says while humans find it hard to drive at a slow, steady pace, driverless cars will do so automatically. He tells me about platooning, which will increase the safety and efficiency of highway driving.
On the highway, if every vehicle is automated, you can have them very close together safely. These vehicles are all basically talking to each other electronically constantly. So if one vehicle, if the vehicle in the front brakes, the vehicle 10 vehicles back already knows that that vehicle is braking instantly and can brake at the same time at the same rate.
I also speak with Dr. John DiCicco, a research professor at the University of Michigan Energy Institute. He says with fewer crashes, cars can be lighter. Smaller engines will help with efficiency, too.
We could see horsepower going the way of the horse. Right now, cars are very overpowered, and there's kind of this car culture, gearhead culture, that perpetuates a horsepower war.
He says another major game changer will be a move away from the car ownership model towards an Uber-like rental system. Dr. Merlin agrees.
Okay, if you don't own your car, if you just rent it when you need it, most of the trips we take are by ourselves. So the car that will come pick you up and drop you off will be a very small car and a very fuel-efficient car. It'll be a one-person car, a two-person car, probably an electric car. So it changes the entire nature of the fleet, because instead of having to buy a vehicle that fits the biggest trip I'm going to take, I can get the vehicle that's the right size for that specific trip.
Can automated and human-piloted cars mix? I'm told that to reap the safety and efficiency benefits, a system must be 100% automated. How do we go from zero to 100%? Designated areas may be the answer.
We'll see automated-only districts in certain places. So it might be, just like we have an HOV lane, we might have an automated-only lane. In certain downtowns, which are very congested, we might have automated-only downtowns because you can get so many more vehicles through there than you can if you have human drivers who are behaving erratically.
Dr. Merlin is very excited about the potential for less space devoted to parking, which he says is the largest use of prime urban land.
These cars that are shared essentially go from one person to the next person. They're parked for very short periods of time. And because they're self-driving, you can place where they are parked, you can place it out of the way. It could be that all the parking that a city needs is a couple of park and ride lots off the interstate.
But both Merlin and DiCicco point out that these many positives are not assured.
The environmental benefits of automated vehicles are not automatic benefits.
What could be eco-unfriendly about driverless cars? Urban and regional planner Dr. Jonathan Levine explains.
The downsides are there is enormous potential for increase in vehicle miles traveled. Well, it wasn't talked about today. It ought to be talked about more.
He says if riding in a car becomes safer and more pleasant, we may find an automated vehicle in every garage.
People living very far distances from work, people setting their vehicles to circulate rather than having to park. Think about that. Huge potential for increasing vehicle miles traveled.
Dr. DiCicco says both utopian and dystopian visions are equally possible. His dystopian vision...
And I call this one the Barca Lounger on wheels, where you take something that's like, say, a Cadillac Escalade, you make it even bigger, it becomes a robot car, you don't have to drive it, you put in sofa beds, big screen TVs, a kitchenette, you name it, surround sound, and you move even further out from, you know, maybe your place of work, you know, into the countryside, and then you can commute that long distance in comfort and luxury, consuming extra gallons of fuel along the way.
Dr. Merlin says we're at a critical juncture.
A lot of people who are researching this right now just think of it as a technological problem. It's more than a technological problem. This is a social problem, and the opportunity is just tremendous, and I am concerned that we're not thinking about it broadly enough.
He says the eco-benefits will increase not only if automated cars are rented, but if trips are shared by more than one rider. Dr. Levine illustrates.
I'm going to the same place as you. Maybe we don't know each other, but we say, hey, you know what? The vehicle can put us together, no problem.
To Dr. DiCicco, I express a concern.
Has anybody asked, like the women of the world, if they're going to feel comfortable getting in a car with a stranger or more and no driver?
That's a great question. And it's one reason why I, in terms of my own professional assessment, have a bit of skepticism towards this shared vision.
I also wonder if driverless cars can top mass transit's ability to preserve open space and reduce congestion. Dr. Merlin tells me his research shows that if Ann Arbor were to replace its bus system with driverless cars, congestion would increase during peak hours. Here's Dr. DiCicco.
We need much better transportation systems in cities now, and we can't do that by just jamming a bunch of automated vehicles into the cities. There's just not the road space.
Using automated cars to connect with and complement mass transit seems to be an answer, as expressed by Ann Arbor's Mayor Christopher Taylor.
And most importantly, these projects will ensure that our community integrates cars, buses, pedestrians, and bicycles into a seamless and safe and effective transportation network. And we couldn't be more excited.
No matter how all this plays out, I have one last question. Who's going to pay for the infrastructure these cars will drive on?
Tranquility, we copy you on the ground.
Fixing potholes is proving harder than getting man on the moon.
60 seconds. Right,
Barbara Lucas, 89.1 WEMU.
Four forward, drift into the right a little. Picking up some dust. 30 feet down, 2.5. 30 feet, 2.5 down. Great shadow. Four forward, 1.5, 30 seconds forward, just